From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we celebrate the London Olympic Games and the Bay Area residents who made it there. We start in the pool.
Swimming is like a local religion here in Orinda.
You know, for some places it's basketball or football. For us, it's swimming.
Then we grab our ping pong paddles and meet the very young and very local members of the U.S. table tennis team.
It's so hard to describe, like, this feeling of complete joy and happiness. Like, I can't believe it. Like, I'm going to Olympics, and it just feels so amazing.
And our local pop-up radio project shows us a cultural divide at the dinner table.
The thing is, in school, they're like, yeah, you have family dinners because you can interact and tell about how your day is, but it's completely different. We have family dinners, but we don't have that talk.
That and more today on Cross Currents. Stay tuned. That music can mean only one thing. The Olympics are here. Tomorrow, the world's creme de la creme of athleticism start what is for many of them the pinnacle of their careers in sports. And the world will watch and root for its citizens, millions glued to their TVs and computers all times of the day and night to catch their favorite athletes doing what they do best.
Bolt has the lead, widening the margin all by himself across the line. Bolt, 19-3-1.
Michael Phelps is coming back in five. Is he going to get the touch? No, he's not. Oh, no. He's got it. Oh, he's got it. Oh, Michael Phelps, 1/100th of a second. I cannot believe he's just done that.
The round off, the full twisting double back. She's done it again. Great work.
Johnson scored 15.975 in qualification.
One back. 2-2. That's what you call USA razzle-dazzle.
And then they get the medal and the national anthem plays, and they're all in tears, and then you're in tears. They're champions. Amidst all the glamour and commotion, some people who you are probably not thinking too much about are the journalists covering the games, those tireless foot soldiers who bring the games to your screens and speakers. Well, we thought about them. What is it like to be a reporter covering the most prestigious sports competition on earth? We put that question to San Francisco Chronicle reporter Scott Ostler. Here he is.
It's the best assignment a sports writer could have, and it's the worst assignment. It's every day for a solid month, every day is a complete new adventure. You wake up not knowing where the big story is going to be. Is it going to be a bomb exploding in the park? Is it going to be a phenomenal athlete doing something nobody's ever done before? And I've run into both those situations. And there's fun things, there's crazy things, there's exciting things. And it's also extremely hard because you, I know it sounds like I'm griping about covering the Olympics, which sounds weird, and I'm not, but it's really hard because for 1 month you're working basically 24/7. There are times you work, you sleep 4 or 5 hours a night, and then you just get up and you're working nonstop until you go back to bed. And so it's extremely demanding and exhausting. And there's every time I've covered the Olympics, there's been at least one point, usually early on, where I stop and I think and I feel like weeping because I'm so frustrated and overcome by my inability to cover this massive event and my cluelessness at even trying to do so. And then somehow I muddle through. And at the end, it's you sit back and you just think, God, that was marvelous. That was great. It was phenomenal, and it was worth all the work. But it's hard work, but it's a great spectacle. Even if you don't like, I don't care about rowing. I don't care about gymnastics on a day-to-day basis. But when you get there and you're at those events and you just get caught up in the whole thing, and it's a really wonderful, cool thing.
That was San Francisco Chronicle reporter Scott Ostler, who's covering the Olympics. Ostler is from the East Bay city of Orinda. It's one of the area's more affluent towns. And one sign of that is that if you've grown up around Orinda, chances are you've met an Olympian or two. The community has sent a swimmer or a water polo player to nearly every Olympics since the 1952 games in Helsinki.
It's a kind of an aquatics town in a lot of ways, so they're always... For instance, the women's water polo team that's going, I know a woman in Orinda who has a niece on that team, and they know the coach, and so that. So when the water polo teams play, for instance, in the Olympics, half of Orinda is in front of their TVs, and the other half is at the Olympics watching. But so they're definitely invested in that.
Most of these aquatic athletes got their start in one of the 9 private swimming clubs that make up the Orinda-Moraga Pool Association. And while athletes from across the world prepare for the Olympic Games this week, kids in the Orinda area are training for next week's OMPA Championship, a 3-day competition featuring around 2,000 young swimmers. To see what all the fuss is about, reporter Mitzi Mock checked out a local swim meet and found that in Orinda, the pool is the community's biggest source of spirit and competition.
Step up. Take your mark.
Swimming is like a local religion here in Orinda.
You know, for some places it's basketball or football. For us, it's swimming.
I would say the majority of the kids start swimming when they're 3 or 4.
We learn how to compete, like, the summer we start.
We moved here and, you know, join the pool like everybody else.
When my first daughter started swimming, I really didn't want her to do it because I grew up swimming.
Swimming's a very big part of my life because my dad was a coach.
People looked at me in shock, like, why isn't she on a team? Are you crazy?
I know there are guys and girls who go from swim practice in the morning to water polo in the afternoon to another swim practice or another meet.
My youngest daughter currently swims on a year-round team. Nobody says, are you crazy? She has to be at practice at 5 in the morning 5 days a week.
I know a lot of people can easily get burnt out.
I think it's the competition is more pushed about what the parents can show the other parents what their kid is like.
But it definitely brings families together. You know, you build friendships and families become close with each other. It's a pretty big deal for everyone.
What's your favorite Olympic sport to watch, and who are you watching this year? Sound off on our Facebook page. We're KALW News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. The U.S. dominates in many Olympic sports, track and field, swimming, basketball. But one sport the U.S. has never won a medal for is table tennis. This year, the U.S. team is hoping to change that. It's going to be a challenge. Only 4 players qualified to compete on the 2012 U.S. Olympic table tennis team. 3 of those 4 live and train right here in the Bay Area at an unlikely Olympic training ground, a converted warehouse that's part of the Indian Community Center in Milpitas, the ICC. I was curious to meet the young Olympians, so I headed over there on one of the final training days before they left for London. Fellow Americans, meet your Olympians.
My name is Timothy Wang, and I'm currently staying in Milpitas, California. I'm originally from Houston, Texas. Started playing table tennis around the age of 3 or 4. I wanted to play video games all the time.
At 21 years old, he's the top male player in the country and the 2010 U.S. National Men's Table Tennis Champion.
When I was little, I wanted to be a teacher in the morning and a nurse at night. I started playing table tennis when I was 7 years old.
And now she's 16. And last but certainly not least, unless you're talking about her age.
Hi, I'm Lily Zhang and I'm from Palo Alto. I don't really remember. I just remember, like, when I was the really little girl, I just wanted to be president of the United States or... And then, like, when I was 9 or 10, my dream became to go to the Olympics. So it kind of started at that age.
Until last month, she was just 15, one of the 2 youngest members of Team USA. Wang, Ching, and Zhang, all Chinese and Taiwanese American, have been playing table tennis here at the ICC since they were barely 2nd and 3rd graders. And here they are now. They're training on a Thursday afternoon in a huge hall with a red floor and 25 blue tables set up, each with a player on either side, ranging in age from 6 to 21. As the balls are hit back and forth, coaches pace between the tables, watching but not hovering. Olympians Ariel Ching and Lily Zhang are playing against each other. Qing and Zhang are basically the best female table tennis players in America. They're playing intensely, back and forth, until Qing slams one, winning a point.
When I was 8 years old, going to Olympics was a dream of mine.
Qing took that dream.
And I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I sealed up the piece of paper in this little box. And for 8 years, I didn't open the box because I told myself that if I looked at that piece of paper, my wish would not come true. So 8 years later, when it finally happened, I just could not believe it still.
Qing says, unlike other kids who may learn their sports at a camp or through lessons, her start was right at home.
My mom liked to play table tennis when she was a little girl, and one day she and my dad couldn't find a babysitter for me, so they just brought me along to the club. And immediately I fell in love with the sport, and it just became my passion.
Lily Zhang had a similar experience.
Both of my parents are originally from China and the Shanxi province, and they just played for fun, though. It wasn't like a serious sport for any of us. I don't really know how it became like this, but I'm really glad it did.
Thank you. 9-3, okay. Balls.
I don't know, it's my first love. since I was 8, I never left table tennis.
That's Coach Massimo, as in Massimo Constantini, the internationally renowned former coach of a number of national teams, including Italy and India. He roams the room observing the players, occasionally stopping a game to adjust a player's hold on a paddle or her footwork. Constantini says in table tennis, family support and heritage play a large role, and the fact that the top players in the country are the children of Chinese immigrants is no coincidence.
Yeah, it's not an accident. Of course, they come, you know, with different culture. You have to think where the sports, you know, has a strong roots, you can say. In China, table tennis is the daily bread. They finish the work, they play table tennis. They have a cement table tennis table on the streets. So table tennis is in their DNA.
Lily Zhang, Ariel Qing, and Timothy Wang all say their lives were forever changed once they won the qualifiers back in April and were officially Olympic bound. Zhang says their training takes from 16 to 20 hours a week.
Well, when we have school, it's usually after school, around after dinner to like 7 to 9, because that's the only time we can, because my parents, they have to get off work and then drive me all the way here.
Qing admits it can be hard to be both a student and a world-class athlete.
I'm gone for 2 to 3 weeks at a time, so they give me homework ahead of time, or I come back and I make it up with all the tests. So they've just been really supportive. But on a daily, normal basis, I usually sleep at 1 or 2 a.m., just trying to finish all my homework, and that's after training, after I finish dinner.
As I look around the room at the sweaty young faces of the teens with their colorful paddles jerking back and forth, I see a South Asian man of medium build talking to players cheerfully. This is Rajul Sait, the man who started it all here at the Indian Community Center.
Basically, I was an active table tennis player in India for 14 years. I played active national circuit for 14 years.
Then in 2000, Sait migrated to the U.S. to earn a master's degree in mechanical engineering. He started the ICC 5 years later with 5 kids, and it quickly grew to serve nearly 200 every week. 3 of them are now in London. And for Rajul Sait, it's about more than just table tennis. The ICC table tennis program is also about global dialogue and understanding.
I have 10 kids right now from India who are like age of 15. Just imagine, they are right now training with our American-born Indian kids and Chinese kids. And when you see after training is over, you just see them talking and sharing their, you know, experience. The Indian kids share their experience, what happens in India, what American kids share their experience, how their school works. That's more exciting than just offer table tennis training here.
Rajul Sait has no illusions about his superstars going far, playing against powerhouse nations like China and Korea. Both he and Coach Massimo Constantini acknowledge that a medal is a long shot.
I don't think it can happen. We should dream. I think dream is the best motivation the player can have. of course, the ball is rounded. You never know. But now we know that the Chinese are the top. Asians are much better than even Europe. And U.S. you can consider like in the third level. So by means of these two players, we can improve. They can break into top 100 in the world. And that's a good start. Being 16 and 17 years old is a great start.
That sense of hope is shared by the players. They realize they're the underdogs in their sport, but Lily Zhang says she's not too worried about winning.
Well, I think this year, since I'm still pretty young, I think that I have still a few more tries. And so this time, I'm just going to try and go out there and play my best and hopefully beat a few people. But in the future, I kind of want to win a medal for the U.S.
Fellow Olympian Timothy Wang looks around at the enthusiastic 8 and 9-year-olds in the room.
Hopefully in the future, more kids will start getting interested in the sport, and we'll have an even stronger generation.
And they'll surely draw inspiration from the Olympians playing at their neighboring tables.
I mean, it's so hard to describe, like, this feeling of complete joy and happiness. Like, I don't know, it just hasn't really, like, it's sunk in, but it's just like, I can't believe it. Like, I'm going to Olympics, and it just feels so amazing.
Is there anyone good at taking pictures? We are talking about good picture, not picture.
As Rajul Sait gathers the players and Coach Massimo to pose for a final picture before they leave for London, I look at them and realize what this really is. An Italian immigrant, an Indian immigrant, and the son and daughters of Asian immigrants reaching the top together to represent the USA. It's the story of America. And whether or not they bring home medals, that story is pure gold.
The way he smiles is going to mess up the picture.
No!
The way he smiles, you can easily make out that he is.
Timothy Wang plays his first singles preliminary this Saturday at 2:30 a.m. Pacific Time. Ariel Xing and Lily Zhang play as a team on Friday, August 3rd at 2 a.m. Pacific Time when they play against Japan. Okay, quick sidebar. We're thinking maybe if Nevada Senator Harry Reid knew that the whole U.S. table tennis team was Chinese and Taiwanese American, he may not have been so, how do you say, dismayed by the fact that Team USA's uniforms were made in China. Take a listen.
I think the Olympic Committee should be ashamed of themselves. I think they should be embarrassed. I think they should take all the uniforms, put them in a big pile and burn them and start all over again. All if they have to wear nothing but a singlet that says USA on it, painted by hand, that's what they should wear. We have people in America, in the textile industry, we have people in the textile industry who are desperate for jobs. And I think what the Olympic Committee done is absolutely wrong.
Well, go Team USA. And you can go online to see pictures of the Milpitas table tennis superstars doing their thing. Go to KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. From table tennis to cuisine, immigrants from all over the world, and especially Chinese Americans, have added their own bit of culture to the Bay Area landscape. In our next story, we'll meet two young women, cousins actually, who share their thoughts on family dinner in the U.S. as American-born Chinese. It's part of our new community storytelling initiative, Hear Hear, a pop-up radio project. So let's pop in at Alemany Farms in San Francisco to hear their story.
Here? Here?
Here.
Okay, together. Okay.
Hear, Hear,
a pop-up radio project.
From KALW.
My name is Anna Zhu, and I live in the Richmond District in San Francisco. This is my cousin, Allison. I'm 18, she's 17.
My name is Allison, and I live in Laurel Heights. This is my cousin, Anna. She's very friendly and talkative. She likes to socialize.
Since I've been going off to college, when I come back, I really like hanging out. Well, we've seen each other when I come back down.
Yeah.
Okay, she called me one night out of nowhere. It was like 11 o'clock, and she called. She's like, can I sleep at your house? I'm like, where did this come from? Where are you? She's like, I'm almost at your house. I was like, oh my goodness, okay, just come over. I eat with my family, so there's like my three sisters and my dad, and we have rice. That's like our main thing. We have like little side dishes that we add on to, and once we're done, we're like done. My dad does not let us talk. That's what we're supposed to do. You eat dinner, that's your task. You can talk afterwards. What's your parents like?
It used to be that we couldn't talk too loud. But then now we could just talk. Well, me and my siblings would talk, and my parents won't really talk with us. My parents would tell me to keep our voices down. Yeah, it's really different from like Western.
It's definitely different. Our parents weren't born here. They were born in China, and I don't know, because the thing is, in school, they're like, yeah, you have family dinners because you can interact, you tell about how your day is, but it's completely different. We have the family dinners, but we don't have that talk. But the strange thing is when my dad eats with his friends, they talk all the time, like at a restaurant. It's like a cultural thing. There's a whole public image for, a lot of people have that public image versus your private image. And like, you know, you can do whatever with your family when privately, but outside you have this image and you're more social, I guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't translate back to like the family dinner, which is strange to me now that I think about it.
That was Anna Zhu and Allison Zhao. They spoke with producer Wendy Baker. Their story is just one of many we're discovering through our community storytelling initiative, Hear Hear, a pop-up radio project. And we want to get yours on the map. Find out how to participate at our website, kalw.org. Just look for Hear Hear, H-E-A-R-H-E-R-E. That's also where you can find a link to all the Hear Hear stories from your neighbors. That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Brian Flagg, Emily Gaddick, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Erica Moo, Taja Lanier, Stephen Short, Isaac Silk, and Mariel Wallof. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car CarShare is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents Monday at 5. Strap on that helmet and prepare for the ride of your life on a bike.
It's the opposite of what you want to do. If you feel that, oh my God, I think they're going to hit me, it's too close, that means you need to move to the left. They may honk at you, and that means you are visible. Good job, Julie.
That's Monday at 5 on Cross Currents. That song you're hearing now, it's being played by the Josh Jones Quartet. Jones is a noted percussionist who's performed with everyone from Larry Coryell to Zion Eye. The Josh Jones Quartet will be at Pier 23 in San Francisco for a 5 p.m. show on Sunday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
On Cross Currents from KALW News, we're not shy about taking on the big stories.
I can't imagine a cow working out in the city. They're just too big.
Well, maybe not that big.
But I think probably you could do sheep.
Oh, most definitely. We go digging for stories wherever we can find them. Some pop up in the tiniest of places.
We are still less than a speck on a moat on the skin of an elephant.
Or in the furthest recesses of the Bay Area, like the Santa Cruz Mountains.
That's actually not a lion on a hunting rampage. It's a female looking for love.
In all the wrong places?
I am like a rabbit. I am replete with ideas, and I am just hopping around, ready to do it.
So are we on Cross Currents. Take a walk on the wilder side with us, weekdays at 5 on KALW 91.7.